On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
As a syndicator, you are really kind of a quarterback of the team. And so my role as the attorney is just to show the investors where the legal piece of the puzzle fits into that overall puzzle. You don't have to worry about understanding all the legal stuff. You really just want to have the context so that you can have an intelligent conversation with your attorney.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story out of nowhere.
It's in the hope that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking, guys. We just are here with some great people. I'm going to bring them right on stage. It's Josh McCown again here with Capital Hacking, our illustrious co-host and the world-famous entrepreneur circle host, Eric Cabral.
Hello.
And a new but great friend of ours, Mauricio Raul, a famous SEC specialized attorney who just is going to blow your mind today if you have been joining the journey on Capital Hacking as we learn to develop our human capital and attract cash capital. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Mr. Mauricio Raul. How you doing, Mauricio?
Doing great, Josh. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
We, it's fun for the people listening. We always say it's growing every week. It's actually matured quite quickly because of Eric's leadership on this show. But today, for those who are watching us on YouTube or whatever, this one's a tricky one, guys. This is our first time when Eric and I are not in the same place.
Yeah, it's exciting. So,
poor Mauricio has been suffering through our technical difficulties, but he's a tough son of a gun. Listen, guys, we have spent many, many weeks together as a group, a community called Capital Hacking. And what we've been doing is learning how to develop our integrity, our sense of others' focusedness, so that we can truly be there for our investors. It's time to start learning about when we're ready to invest in an asset, we need to also consider the capital position we're all in. It's time to talk to a professional who helps individuals like you and I put a legal structure together to make syndication of capital possible so that we follow the SEC guidelines, we provide ethical care to our investors. And Eric, you and I have been talking about this since the day you and I met.
Mm-hmm.
This whole world of syndication.
Yeah, but so can we, for our audience who is not familiar with SEC rules and regulation, can you quickly define, you know, why that's necessary and what that is, you know, sophisticated versus, you know, accredited and things like that, just so that people have a primer going into Mauricio? Well, or maybe Mauricio can actually shed some
light. I think you nailed it, Eric. I think we should let Mauricio handle that instead of me. But let's bring Mauricio with your expertise. What is the word syndication? How about we start there, Eric? Because not everybody who's been on our show yet has done syndication.
Yes.
So what is syndication, Mauricio?
So a syndication is actually pretty, from its most simple form, it's the aggregation of capital. And most people think of capital as money, but it's really more than capital, it's resources. But it's the aggregation of resources in order to go do something. And in the real estate world, people are aggregating capital to go, you know, take down bigger and better projects. But remember that it doesn't have to be cash. It can be other kinds of resources like relationships, like your credit, like your expertise, like your time, like your knowledge, like all these things you can actually syndicate. And a lot of people that are doing syndicating are getting investors who have the money and have the desire to invest in real estate, but they don't have the time. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the expertise. And so you're bringing in that piece of the puzzle in order for everybody to kind of have a win-win scenario where the passive investor doesn't have the time but can leverage your time and your knowledge in order to get a good return on their investment.
Yeah, Mauricio, I've been able to learn from you on multiple occasions because you are one of the real go-to speakers for the Real Estate Guys radio empire. You know, that organization has taught me everything I know about the world of syndication and about how to take our skills, our human capital, and now start to allow that to leverage cash capital and build big projects like what we do with our our day job, our resort business.
Right.
Eric, you and I have talked about this all the time about the Real Estate Guys Radio, and Mauricio is like the key speaker at the event that Melanie and I, that changed our lives, which is called Secrets of Successful Syndication. So Mauricio, so syndication, you said something really cool. Eric, did you pick up on the idea that it's not just about cash?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's completely aligned with what we always talk about, you know, human capital, you know, things other than what people normally think of when they think cash or, you know, money in the bank. And we're talking about human capital times. And yeah, he hit that. What else did you want to highlight there? Because he shared a ton there, which is great.
I wanted to ask Mauricio if you could share, go back in time, how did you become what I would consider one of the country's specialized, you know, experts in this area for people that are learning how to syndicate, that we can use your skills. You actually have a killer program. How did you get in this business of law?
Yeah, I just kind of fell into it. So, you know, I'll give you the 5 second, not the five, I'll give you the 30 second version. So I, you know, after I graduated from law school, I did what every law student's dream is, which is go work for a large law firm. Did we freeze there for a little bit, or are we still good?
Still good.
Good. Sorry, that's probably mine. So I went to work for, I went to do my kind of the dream job, which is I went to work for a law firm, one of the largest law firms in Long Beach, California, and I did securities laws. But I wasn't really, you know, it was a great firm to work at, but, you know, I basically found myself in the rat race, right? I'd get up in the morning, I'd take a shower, get dressed, get in my car, drive to work. I'd work all day, I'd work all night, I'd come home, I'd, you know, maybe watch a little TV and then go to bed and do it all again the next day. And I knew that there's just something that didn't fit right. And luckily for me, I came across the little purple book, you know, the Rich Dad Poor Dad that most of us have read and changed our lives. And that changed my life. I read that on a plane ride from Miami, and I read it in one sitting, and it was just a life-changing thing. And for me, I got very lucky, because after I read that book, literally the week after, I'm driving my car down Southern California, and I hear the radio spot, which was the Real Estate Guy's radio spot, but it was Robert Kiyosaki's Dropping, which you may have heard it. And it went something along the lines of, hey, this is Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. If you're serious about investing in real estate, check out these guys, the Real Estate Guys. They really know what they're talking about. Mm. And at that time, I was really interested in real estate, and they had just started a program in Southern California. And so I went to that event, and again, those guys blew me away. And again, long story short, at some point, Russ, one of the co-hosts, approached me and said, hey, are you interested in coming to work for our organization? Not just the Real Estate Guys, but they have a development company, they have a real estate company. And so I decided to go work for them as in-house counsel. I was their general counsel for about 4 or 5 years, and they were doing a ton of syndications. So I did a lot of syndications working for those guys and doing their syndications back in the day. And it just got to the point where, you know, I started helping out some of their members that doing other things. And I kind of grew into my own little business with their approval, of course, because I was still working in-house. And then that kind of led to me starting my own firm, Premier Law Group, back in 2006, where obviously I kept the Real Estate Guys and Robert and Russ as my sort of my VIP clients. But I kind of branched off on my own, started helping out a lot of their listeners, a lot of their members, helping them structure their syndications and make sure that they basically stayed out of jail and didn't become cellmates with Bernie Madoff, right?
Well, wow. I did not, you know, sometimes it surprises you just how much you've already done with those guys. And then you're right. I also met you originally through Dave Zook, who's one of the students of their program and who many of us on the show here know. As a matter of fact, the Hive is in Trenton, so where Eric and I usually podcast from, which is not far from where Dave is. So what was really interesting about you and the support you gave Dave is you guys went, with your tutelage and his creativity, you've gone into so many different industries other than just real estate, which is unique maybe about you and the people that you work with. I've seen you guys in syndicate energy deals, even ATM deals, which are so unique. And then, of course, all kinds of levels of buildings. Right. Most of the times it's been multifamily. Is that a fair statement, Mauricio?
Yeah, I would say that 95% of the practice I do is multifamily, because that's where they're doing. But we do self-storage. We do mobile home parks. We actually did a cryptocurrency fund last year. So we kind of did branch out a little bit. But it's primarily the vast majority of my clients are real estate investors, if not all of them. Even the deals that I'm doing, like the ATM that Dave and I've done, and the coal and the energy, those are all still coming from my real estate investor clients. So I would say that 99% of my clients are real estate investors, and then 95% of my practice is multifamily. We still do the occasional single family, but that doesn't scale well. And so the only time we do single families is if we do sort of a portfolio raise where somebody's buying 10 or 15 of them at a time and raising, you know, a couple million bucks to take down those in cash.
You know, Eric, anytime you have.
Yeah, I have a question. How, because I know you do national,
international
work, but then you also do international. So how does that? It seems a little sticky and tricky for me to imagine, like, you know, our SEC rules here are somewhat complex, but then how do you get involved on an international level? How did that come about?
Well, first of all, I've lived internationally quite a bit. So that's how I think the international piece comes in. But when I say international, I'm talking about international clients. And the projects are international, but the capital formation happens in the U.S., okay. And that's why the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, is involved. The U.S. SEC is involved. If it was a scenario where there was a foreign investor, I'm sorry, a foreign syndicator with a foreign property, and they decided to not engage the U.S., did not market into the U.S., did not sell into the U.S., then the SEC isn't really concerned about that. There's a specific exemption called Regulation S as in Sam, and that'll cover you from the SEC standpoint. Because in all honesty, the SEC doesn't care about Panamanian investors or, you know, Asian investors or whatever. And so if everything's outside of the U.S., we don't really worry too much about the SEC laws. But a lot of my international clients are looking to raise money into the U.S. and raise money from U.S. clients, which is why the SEC is involved.
Gotcha.
And by the way, not to interrupt, but let's talk real quick about why the SEC is involved in the first place.
That's what I was going to hit. Great. So teach us, first of all, what is the SEC? No listener left behind, because we have a range here of guests that go from motivational speakers and really amazing people. We've even had Robert Kiyosaki on here, and Russell Gray, and all kinds of wonderful, good people. Nice. But so some people really can deep dive. But if you don't mind, yes, step back. What is the SEC? Why does it exist? And how do we? It seems intimidating to even be talking about a federal organization like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the SEC is the Securities and Exchange Commission, and they're the federal agency that governs all of the securities area, sale and marketing of securities. That's at the federal level. Then each state would have their own state securities board, or they're called different things. Some people call them a state department of corporation. Some are securities boards. But we primarily focus on the federal level because a lot of the exemptions, which we'll talk about in a second, rely on federal law, and federal law preempts, which is just a fancy way of saying we don't worry about the states too much. There's still some attention that we need to pay to the states, but this primarily happens at the federal level, which is how a California attorney like myself can practice in all 50 states and also internationally, because this is at the federal level. But the real question a lot of people ask, especially if they're starting out, is like, why is the SEC involved? You know, I'm buying a piece of property. You know, I'm buying a single family home, or I'm buying a multifamily property. You know, why are securities involved, or why is the SEC involved? And most people think of securities as, you know, stocks and bonds and mutual funds, maybe stock options and stuff. But the definition of a security, according to the SEC, is really broad, and it includes those things, but it also includes, you know, TIC agreements, you know, tenants in common agreements. It includes profit sharing agreements. It includes side contracts. It includes, I kind of joke, high fives. It includes handshakes. It includes anything. So the catch-all cheat sheet that I like to use for security, because if you pulled up the definition of a security, if I had it in here, it'd be a full sheet of paper full of the definition. But my definition, to make it easier, is anytime you are taking money from an investor where the returns are generated by your efforts, you are dealing with a security. Let me just repeat that. Anytime you take money from an investor where the returns are generated by your efforts, you are dealing with a security. And I don't care whether you're doing it in an LLC, a corporation, an LP, a profit sharing agreement, anything on the side. People sometimes try and get creative with their structuring. And they say, well, if I structure it as a joint venture, or if I structure it as a TIC arrangement, somehow I get around the SEC laws, which just isn't true. And I think that's one of my main one of the main biggest mistakes that most people make is not realizing that they're issuing securities and have to worry about the securities laws, because they think, well, either, hey, I'm doing real estate, which doesn't apply, or I'm going to get really crafty, and because I'm not issuing shares in a company and I'm just doing a side contract, somehow that gets around the securities laws. But the SEC's gotten pretty savvy to that, and they have these catch-alls, which basically means, again, if you're raising money from passive investors, you're going to be considered issuing a security, which is why the SEC is involved and why we have to comply with both federal and state, although most of the time we don't worry too much about the states.
Now, why do you think – sorry, go ahead, Josh.
No, Eric, that's what I was going to say, because you've been around some capital raising up there.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, maybe get – so anyone in the audience that might be wondering, why would someone want to avoid – you know, and maybe jog around the SEC and put together a JV or any other sort of creative way. Why would they try to do that?
Cost and compliance. So the first thing is cost. Obviously, there's a compliance cost involved in complying with the securities laws. Not only your attorney, your securities attorney, which you really want to hire somebody that really specializes in this. Not, and security is a pretty large area of practice. You want to do something that really focuses on the syndications and the exemptions, and then all the compliance. I mean, once you, and that goes along with the cost, but once you're dealing with a security, especially if you're dealing with non-accredited investors, which again, I'm sure we should define that pretty quickly here, but you are required to provide an enormous amount of disclosures to those investors, basically telling them every single way which way they could lose all their money. In fact, the disclosure documents sometimes a little bit scary, because everybody's, you know, somebody's really excited about getting into a deal. Then you put this scary document in front of them and they read it and they're like, oh my God, I can lose all my money. And you know, this can happen, that can happen, which is true. And so that's part of the compliance. So people, you know, obviously you'd want to avoid that if you can. And if you're raising money from a couple of people, there's creative ways we can structure things so we can avoid being considered issuing a security. But in general, that's the reason you want to avoid it, is the cost and the compliance involved.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
And the ongoing, what would be an ongoing cost, would you say?
There's no real ongoing cost. So you've got the attorney fees that are probably the bulk of your compliance cost. You've got filing fees to the states that you've got to worry about. But those aren't recurring. Those are sort of one time that you get reimbursed from your raise. And so you just put that in your budget. The only ongoing, which is really minor, is once you create the entity that's going to be holding the property or the asset and where the investors are going to be coming into, that typically requires an annual renewal. But, you know, we're talking a couple $100. That's nothing really significant. Mm-hmm.
So the heavy lifting is in the beginning, and that's what people try to avoid, right? I mean, it's not like an ongoing, you know, I'm going to get charged thousands and thousands of dollars every year for this. I mean, it's
like
a no-brainer.
The one exception to that is there's a particular exemption which requires sort of a mini registration with the SEC. Usually we don't register anything with the SEC, and maybe that's maybe our next segment we should talk about. But in general, we don't register things with the SEC. But there's a particular exemption that you do sort of a mini registration, and that does have some ongoing compliance requirements, sort of quarterly reports, annual reports, financials, and stuff like that. But that's a very unique exemption that most people don't use unless it's a very unique set of facts and circumstances, which we can talk about. But where I was going, I guess, is, you know, once you determine that you are in fact dealing with a security, which again, most of you will be if you're raising money, then I always say there's really only three things that you need to worry about that really focus on. Number one is we either register that security with the SEC, or number two, we find an exemption to registration, or number three, it's illegal. I mean, it's really that simple. So as we mentioned earlier, we really try and avoid registration with the SEC because that typically takes, you know, a couple of years, sometimes 1 or 2 years, and it costs six, I've even seen seven figures. And so, look, if you put in an offer to an apartment building and you've got 90 days to close, you just don't have time to go, you know, submit your offering to the SEC, get approval. We all know how fast the government works, and it just takes too much time. So we avoid full-blown registrations at all costs. We avoid illegal offerings, obviously. And I'm not talking just Bernie Madoff stuff. I mean, obviously, if you're engaging in fraud and misrepresentation, that's, I mean, I assume nobody is listening to this podcast is thinking of doing that. But an illegal offering could be something as simple as, you know, failure to disclose, again, in that important document. If you don't disclose everything, that's an illegal offering. Or maybe, and here's a big one that people, again, just aren't aware of, if you decide to pay people referral fees for them to help you raise money, for example, which is usually illegal unless you're a broker-dealer, that could be an illegal offering. So, but we obviously avoid number one, we avoid number three. And so my world, I live in number two, which is we find exemptions to registration. And fortunately for us, there's a couple that, you know, 95% of the people use because it's very broad and pretty much covers, you know, again, 95% of the people, which I'm happy to get into.
Eric, you're probably picking up on what I'm picking up on is Mauricio is absolutely an expert in this world. Yeah. And I want to step back and we need to define who we can raise money from. Okay, I want to make sure we get those kind of vocabulary words done. But then hopefully, you know, we can make sure we don't leave any listeners behind because we want to talk about why this is Mauricio's passion as well. Because I know him and I know all the people around him. This is way more than just a business for them or maybe more than just a legal program. There's like they're on a mission to help people. But let's get the definitions down. So SEC, we've covered. We know that we're using this word exemption, meaning we're not going to file an IPO like an SEC filing for Uber. That's an SEC filing. Or a major filing in order to buy a multifamily. We're going to do something called a prescribed exemption. So that's probably a mouthful. But now let's talk about who can write the check. So Mauricio, you've helped us. Let's say we've put together a new investment program. And we want to go out and say people can invest as long as they have $50,000. That's not enough information, is it, Mauricio? Even though they have 50 grand, we may not be able to let them invest. Is that true?
That's correct. So depending on which exemption we choose, we may be limited to the types of people that we accept money from. So let's talk a couple of definitions. And the main ones here are accredited investors versus non-accredited investors. And so an accredited investor is someone who has $1 million of net worth excluding their primary residence, or they've earned $200,000 for the last couple of years and have a reasonable expectation of earning the same or over $200,000 this year. If you fill into those categories, you're an accredited investor. And just kind of as a funny side note, the reason they added the primary resident section to the accredited investor is because back in, you know, the early 2000s, everybody in California was an accredited investor because their primary home was worth, you know, $500,000-$700,000. Everybody was making so much money back before the financial crisis. So they added that. So $1 million excluding your primary residence. So there's some exemptions, for example, not to get too technical, but there's a Reg D exemption called 506C as in Charlie, which maybe we can get into also in the next segment, which only allows you to accept accredited investors. And so in that scenario, if you're not accredited, you would not be eligible to invest in the deal. There are other exemptions that allow us to take a limited number of non-accredited investors, but those investors need to be sophisticated, meaning they need to have sufficient knowledge and expertise so that they can, you know, effectively, you know, analyze and figure out the merits and the risks of the investment. And so that's a requirement from the syndicator. They just need to make sure that these guys are sophisticated. And then the third category is in some of these exemptions that prohibit advertising, you need to have what's called a substantive relationship with the investor. And a substantive relationship, again, is you know them well enough that you feel that they do have the knowledge and expertise, either themselves or with some agent or representative, that they can actually effectively analyze your deal and figure out what the merits and the risks are. And so those are kind of the three categories of investors that you've got to think about. Number one, are they accredited? Number two, are they sophisticated? Number three, do you have a substantive relationship? Because most of the time, actually, you have to have a substantive relationship with someone before you can offer them a particular deal.
I didn't realize that you categorized those as three. I always thought, forgive me for saying either, but we always thought It was definitely accredited. We understand there's an SEC definition. Got it. And that's a special, that allows you even less, I'm sorry, it allows you a substantial amount of documentation for that exemption, but less than if you and I were to put together an exemption that allows sophisticated non-accredited. That's an even bigger filing because, of course, the SEC is out there to protect families to make sure that no one is preying on anyone. So they actually require additional disclosures. But you talk about the third one of substantial relationship. I thought, and maybe there's some other syndicators listening, that the sophisticated non-accredited, you also had to have a substantive relationship with.
Correct. Yes. No, you're absolutely right. So I broke them down into categories for definition purposes. But yes, you would have to have both the pre-existing substantive relationship. In those exemptions, you have the option to take a limited number of non-accredited as long as they're sophisticated. But in addition to that, so it's not really a separate thing, in addition to having taken somebody that's non-accredited and sophisticated, you must have a substantive relationship with that particular investor. So yes, if you're trying to put them together, maybe there's two, but in my mind, from a definition standpoint, there's three different categories and three different types of people that are out there, and sometimes you need two of them in order to make a deal happen.
Well, we're here with Mauricio. I want to make sure we keep saying Mauricio Raul. You are the partner, founder of Premier Law Group, correct?
Yep, I'm the founder and CEO. Started the company back in 2006, and been doing this, I've been doing securities work for the last 19 years, but specifically on syndications since 2006.
And what I like about you is you've really kind of McDonald-ized it in a great way. Like McDonald's, Ray Kroc.
What does that mean?
This is my, you know, we work in resort businesses and we're trying to make sure that we have a structure for every task we do with a protocol and how you do it and a checklist. You have that for creating legal syndication exemptions or SEC filings, exemption filings. You have a program. Now, but what I love about talking to you, because of course I want to work with you on several projects coming up, you have both a system, meaning you, if I call you and we're ready to do a deal, you have a whole process, very structured process. But then you, maybe unlike other attorneys, do a great job of digging into the business plan. So I like how you have a process that allows it to go really very efficiently because it's your specialty, but also you take a lot of personal attention in the business. So can you tell me a little more about describe to the audience what I mean by this personal attention to the business?
Yeah. So the first thing I do with a new client is the client prepares the business plan, right? Because obviously they're the ones who know what they're going to do. And that's kind of the main marketing tool. You know, I always joke, nobody's going to invest in your deal based on the documents that I draft, the PPM and all that stuff. If anything, you have to oversell them on the deal. So by the time they read my materials, they're going to get it away. So the first op is to put together a preliminary business plan. And what I do is I do what I call a deep dive into that business plan, and I underwrite the deal. And to me, that's very natural because the only way I can figure out what disclosures and what risks go into the documentation is I need to pull that information from you. Like I need to understand your deal. I need to understand all the risks and ask you questions because a lot of times, you know, there are things that are digging in there that the only way for me to figure out is to pull it out of you. So I spend a lot of time on the business plan on the front end. Once I review that business plan, I have 1,000 questions, 1,000 comments. We get on the phone and we go through those, and we literally go through several drafts of the business plan where I help the client also on the structuring side, not only the entity structuring, which is important, but also on the deal structure, even simple things. Do you really want to do equity? Maybe we do debt. Maybe we do a combination. Are you taking a preferred return? Are you, you know, whatever the structure is. I've done so many of these that I help out on that. So I spend a lot of time on the front end, especially when they're first time syndicators, and then they even have more questions. So I just spend a lot of time on the front end. And again, to me, it's natural because again, I need to do that in order to figure out, you know, what to put in the docs. And so once we're done with that process of going through the business plan and going through several drafts. Now, again, if I'm working with somebody like Dave Zook, who I've been working for, and we've done over 20 of these, I think, or maybe closer to 30 now. Yeah. So he knows what I like and I know what he likes. So by the time he sends me a business plan, it's 90% done. And you know, I spend a couple hours on it and we're done. I've had clients who send me a two-page Word document, and we basically start from scratch. And you know, and most people fall in between. But once that business plan is done, you can send that out to your prospects, however you're doing that, a webinar or your list or whatever. And then we get working on the offering documents, which are the PPM, which is that private placement memorandum, which is the document that puts all the disclosures, all the risk factors, all the ways you could lose money. And it is a little bit of a scary document, but I always analogize it to when you go to the doctor. I always tell the story of when I had my tooth pulled and they put me under. And it's funny because I got to go get pulled more teeth now next week and put me under again, but because I have terrible teeth. When you have those operations or you have those procedures, they give you that medical consent form. It's all the ways that you could get hurt or you even could die from me pulling out your wisdom tooth, even though the odds of that are probably 1 in 1,000,000. That all gets disclosed in that yellow sheet called a medical consent form. That's what the PPM is. It's just kind of medical consent form, just letting everybody know that they could lose all their money. Here are all the risks. And again, the only way for me to figure out all the risks of your particular deal, which is going to be different from Eric's deal, which is different from Dave's deal, is to do that deep dive, pull that information from you so that I can put that proper information in the private placement memorandum and related documents.
Eric, did you notice when he said pull, it looked like he was yanking a tooth out? That's on his mind.
I think he was pulling out a wine cork from a wine bottle.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. That's what it looks like. You're right. And then he's a wine aficionado. So one day we'll have him at the Renault Winery and we'll have him taste our champagne, which, Mauricio, you're going to love this. One of our investments is Renault Winery, and it's so old that it predates the regulation of champagne exclusively being used in the word according to the campaign from 1850, our property here. So anyway, we get to call our champagne.
Yeah, when I'm on the East Coast, I'm definitely coming to check you guys out.
So Mauricio, there's something missing here. I think if we're listening here, I think we get it. This is pretty scary stuff. Eric, am I, if you and I are the listener and you're driving.
Yeah.
Are you a little nervous right now? You're like, we should move to the capital.
Yeah, probably a little intimidated if you've never done it before, worked, in this space before. Absolutely. But I think Mauricio has a skill and a power to explain it in a very approachable way. So, hopefully everyone really finds it less intimidating, after.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, because you're making the distinction, right, that Mauricio is not intimidating, but it does sound a little intimidating, Mauricio. Mm-hmm. So here's a thought. You and I know our good Robert Kiyosaki. I know him less than you, but you know him really well. And he's famous for saying, surround yourself with a great team. And this is where guys like you come in. I mean, when we're listening to you on this podcast, we know you have thought this through. You even just, I don't think people are picking up on it if it's their first time talking about syndication, but I am, because I know I've been through the ringer on syndication, and now I'm really passionate about getting more people involved in syndication, is you threw out the fact that you can model not only the business plan, meaning sell more widgets, but you can model the capital formation differently. And Mauricio, I don't mind if you, would you mind just sharing, do you understand how that, to new people, that's actually surprising, because I think most people think to go buy a business or build a company or a real estate business, you have to either get debt or sell equity. It sounds like you're saying there's various ways to do syndication, including even debt syndication. Am I hearing you correctly?
You can do, the nice thing about syndication and the fun part for me is you can structure your syndication pretty much any way you like. As long as we're disclosing, that's the name of the game, right? We got to disclose. But and I always joke, like if you want to structure it so that you take 99% of the profits and the investors get 1%, knock yourself out. We can do that. Now, you're not going to sell your syndication to anybody, but you can do that. And so I kind of pride myself on being a little bit more creative. And so what I like to do is listen. Obviously, a big part of this is listening. What is it that the client's looking for? Like, tell me what the outcome is, and then I'll figure out how to get there with the appropriate structure. And I'll give you a teaser on one of them that we've done for another client is I had a client who wanted to raise debt. So he didn't want to give them any ownership. He wanted to keep most of the profit, just wanted to give somebody a loan, basically an interest rate. But the investors were a little hesitant because when you get debt, you don't get all the depreciation benefits from the real estate. And so we had that dilemma, and that was more of a marketing issue. It was like, how do I sell them on this thing? And so what I came up with was basically structured it as an equity deal so that they would get the depreciation, but ultimately it acted like a loan or a note. And the way we do that is we give them equity, we give them a fixed return, and then on the back end, we basically buy them out. So in this particular case, I think we started off with a sort of a 60, not to get too detailed, but we started off with like a 16% note that we wanted to give. We wanted to give investors a 16% return annualized. And the way we did that is we made them equity. So we made them owners of the company. So they got all the depreciation. We gave them an 8% fixed return, right? So that's all they got was 8%. Anything above 8% went to the syndicator. So they got 8%. And then on the back end, when they sold the property or even refinanced the property, we'd give them the other 8% to make it 16 annualized. And then we would have an option to buy them out. So we would actually buy them out in exchange for that last 8%. So the net result was the investor got that 16% annualized return, just like a note, and it was fixed, but they also got the benefit of the equity of the depreciation because they were, for that period of time, those 2, 3, 4 years, they were actual owners of the LLC that owned the property. So all that bonus depreciation, all that depreciation flowed up, and they were able to take that and benefit from that on their taxes.
This is what my wife, Eric, I always tell you, my wife, Melanie, who is the president of our syndication company, which is Accountable Equity, this is her favorite topic, is the power of working with guys like Mauricio for this, utilizing the IRS tax code, right? Mauricio, you just described this whole idea of equity creates the opportunity to have tax deductions. Tax deductions can offset your other passive income. That whole nuance, it sounds like you are fluent in that as well. We want to give you credit that you're not a CPA, correct?
I'm not a CPA, and I don't play one on TV, but I do know a lot of, I obviously work with a lot of CPAs, and just a caveat too, and this applies to any structure. I just finished doing a video on 1031ing, how to do a 1031 into a syndication, which is another topic. But the important thing on all of these is you want to make sure you have a really good CPA on your team.
Correct.
Running this by your CPA. So I don't do any of these structures without consulting with the client CPA first, make sure that, you know, we're doing it right from a tax perspective, because the whole point of that was to get a tax benefit for the investors. And I'm not a tax specialist. I mean, again, I know enough to be dangerous and to have intelligent conversations with CPAs, but I would then go to the CPA and say, look, Mr. CPA or Mrs. CPA, we're looking to do this. Is that, will that work from a tax perspective? And as soon as I get the sign off, we're good. But it is important, because I'm not going to offend too many CPAs that are listening, but I always joke that if you ask 3 CPAs the same question, you get 5 different answers. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped trying to figure that out a long time ago. So I essentially punt and I just go with whatever your CPA goes with. And so if the CPA says yes, then we're a go. If the CPA says no, even if I don't agree with it, or I know there's another CPA that would approve it, I don't do it. So you either have to switch CPAs or you just don't do it.
Dan, do you have that kind of private conversation with your clients sometimes? Do you say, hey, I respect your CPA. I just want to share with you there's other philosophies out there.
I don't push it too much, but I definitely will express my opinion if I disagree. I mean, we had that not too long ago on another structure, on an LLC structure, and the CPA gave an answer. And I know from talking to other CPAs that I have a lot of respect for, I know that you could do that. So I just made the comment that I kind of disagreed with it. And that one, it wasn't a huge deal, so we just didn't do it. But if it's a big enough deal, then I would definitely recommend doing that.
Sorry, guys. We're here with Mauricio Raul. Am I saying your name properly?
Mauricio Raul, yep.
It's such a great name. And as a matter of fact, it reminds me that you came to this country as a young boy, right? You weren't born in the U.S., or were you?
No, I was born in Chile, in Santiago, Chile. And when I was very young, when I was 2 years old, we moved to England. So I spent my formative years in England and had a really heavy British Cockney accent. If you look at my home videos when I was 10 years old and telling jokes to the camera, when I say camera, I'm talking about those huge, you know, TV cameras when they first came out. I have a really heavy Cockney accent. But I lived 8 years in England. I lived 8 years in Chile because we went back and lived there after I was 10. But then I moved here when I was 15 years old. So I've been here now 31 years. So I had a pretty hardcore accent when I started, and then obviously I lost it. And I've been told I don't really have much of a non-US accent. So
I think you have a very nice, actually feels like a perfect US accent, to be honest. I can't distinguish where it's from.
And I think I came right at the, well, I think two things helped me. One, I came right at the border. When you're 15, you can still, like, if you come in when you're 20, 25, it's really hard to lose your accent. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that I was fluent in English, or even though it was British English, that helped me as well. And I think I dropped the accent pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mauricio, when you go back, is fun. Sorry, go ahead.
I want to make sure we just keep telling everybody, just there's one thing I just want to hone in, guys. I apologize for being needling this, but it's not normal to talk to an attorney that speaks the way Mauricio speaks. He speaks in terms of the business, first of all. He speaks in terms of collaboration with the other professionals for the ultimate goal of the client. Now, that is normal. Every lawyer will tell you, I'm here for the betterment of my client and all of that. But they don't even know what they don't know. So what I love about Mauricio is that he's kind of understood what is going on behind the scenes of these investments. And that's honestly because at some point you read the Purple Book and you kind of get that mindset of abundance and how money really works. So you made a quick reference to how your mind shifted that summer day driving down and listening to the Real Estate Guys radio and hearing Robert Kiyosaki. Would you mind telling us why you were ready for that change in your life? Like, what was it that you needed to change for?
Yeah, I mean, what's the saying? When the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that was for me, because I, again, going through that routine, you know, and I had these out of body experiences where it would be like 11 o'clock at night. I'd be in my office. Everybody else is gone. So everything else is dark except my office has light. And I literally would have an out of body experience where I would be looking almost like I took a helicopter ride, and I was looking outside of the building, looking in, and I could see the whole building dark except for my office that had light. And I was, you know, plugging away on the computer, drafting some motion or, you know, preparing for trial or whatever, because I was doing litigation. And so I just knew in my gut that there's something was wrong with that. That's not the way life works. That there's no way you bust your butt for the, you know, 40 years and you wait till you're 65 and then you start enjoying life or something like that. And I knew there was something wrong there. And so when I read Robert's book, and all of Robert's books, if you notice, they're not really filled with that much content, or whatever content it is, it kind of repeats through the books, but he's really all about context and showing you that mind shift. You know, it doesn't really give you specifics. And so to me, just realizing there was something more out there that you could, you know, start enjoying life and not get in that. I mean, that's the first time I found out the word rat race. And that's exactly where I was. I was in the rat race. And I didn't really even realize that term. So to me, the biggest mind shift, just to share real quickly, and it was just those three balance sheets and P&L examples, where this is what the poor looks like, the middle class, and the rich, and diagramming how their money comes in, it flows in and out. And that to me was revolutionary. The concept of actually, instead of, you know, again, rule number one is the rich don't work for money. Instead of working for cash, you actually work for assets, and you build up your asset portfolio, and then the assets spit off income and cash so that you can live off the assets. And obviously that's a process, and it takes time to get to the point where you're spitting off enough cash so that you can cover all your expenses. And at that point you become financially free. But that model was, again, very foreign to me. And so that just, all of that stuff just blew me away. And that was kind of the first introduction to all these concepts. And remember, I was at that point 20, you know, 26, 27. I mean, I really love seeing a lot of my clients, or just people come into the seminars that bring their kids. You know, I was just at a seminar a couple of weeks ago, and somebody brought their 15 or 16 year old daughter. Man, if I was exposed to all this stuff when I was 15 or 16, you know, who knows where I'd be now. But that was kind of my big takeaway from Robert's book.
That's basically right there, Eric, is our soundbite, because that's why you and I wanted to have Mauricio on the phone and on the Zoom here, because that's not how you normally work with attorneys. I mean, this is really powerful stuff, is that he's had that epiphany moment that allows him to be that kind of agile support and colleague while you're trying to figure out your own nuances, your own business plan. It's just really revolutionary, buddy. And that's why so many people I know that are in the world of syndicating all respect you, and most of the time are your clients. So congratulations, buddy. I mean, you just have a reputation that goes way beyond you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Eric, have you done a syndication yet?
Hey, I do it with others. Can you hear me? Yeah, I do it through others. Others sweat, and you know, I'm more in the passive realm at this point. But yeah, I do want to eventually, and Mauricio will be one of the first that I call when that happens.
And because Mauricio, Eric is, he's launched this On Air Brands Network, which has numerous podcasts and does amazing work.
Awesome.
And then he also was a real estate investor. As a matter of fact, it was the purple book for you, right, Eric?
Yeah, yeah, it was for me. Mr. Kiyosaki, yes, of course. And I think 99.9% of the investors that you talk to usually, that was the pill for them too. So, and that's what I love about Mauricio here. He speaks investor talk, you know, investor knees, or, you know, he gets it. And, that's very helpful. When you're adding people to your team, you know, everybody has the same exact mindset and you don't have to explain why you do things and why you want to do things. And, he's right there with you. So.
Yeah. Let me say two things about the team thing, by the way. Team, also the real estate guys use a great acronym for team, which is together everyone achieves more, which I thought was always pretty cool.
I love that.
But you know, I always say this on my presentations is, you know, going back to Eric when you were saying it's a little intimidating or what have you. Remember, as a syndicator, you are really kind of a quarterback, right, of the team. And so my role as the attorney, it's really just to talk, again, talking about context. It's just to show the investor or show when I'm presenting, showing the participants where the syndicate, the legal piece of the puzzle fits into that overall puzzle. Because the legal piece is just one piece of it, right? And you got to talk to you about actually raising the capital, the marketing, your branding, your, you know, podcast, whatever. There's all these multiple pieces, moving pieces, which I call the puzzle. And for me, the legal piece is one. So to me, it's not your job. You don't have to worry about understanding all the legal stuff. You really just want to have the context so that you can have an intelligent conversation with your attorney. You don't need to know all the rules. You don't need to know. That's what the attorney's for. But as long as you get a good attorney and you've got at least the basics that you can ask the right questions and have an intelligent conversation, that's all you need to do. At that point, you're just managing the legal team and managing the CPA and managing your marketing and managing your equity raise, and all that stuff. Just one piece of the puzzle.
Yes. And that's why you always speak at the event that we, Capital Hacking this year, will be sponsoring or bringing a large group of listeners to the Secrets of Syndication. Will you be speaking this September?
Absolutely. I'm leaving this weekend. They're now doing a boot camp version of that as well, a little bit more drilling down in the weeds. And then they continue to do their syndication seminar twice a year. And I think the next one's coming up in September, I think. But I will definitely be there talking about the legal piece of how to practice safe syndication, which is kind of a
by the way, his PowerPoint says practicing safe syndication, you know. So it's very provocative. I love it. I just also want to make sure we share a little bit about your heart, because I can hear a lot of you and Robert Helms and Russell Gray, you know, melding of your minds as you talk. Those are the guys with the real estate radio. Real Estate Guys Radio, about this idea of moving more and more good operators or good capital raisers into the world of syndication. You know, like people like my wife and I joined your movement. You guys at the Secrets of Syndication kind of opened our eyes that this is something valuable we could do for the world, because you guys have this kind of philosophy that more of us should get out of Wall Street and into Main Street. I just wanted to give you a minute to share why that's so powerful for you and maybe explain it better than I did.
No, I think you did a good job. I mean, I've been hanging out with the real estate guys for so long, because I definitely absorb a lot of their teachings, and, you know, I think a lot of the values I've created, I've got to give credit to the real estate guys. I mean, you know, they've always been, you know, leading with value, which is kind of what I try and do, and just trying to add value, and that'll result in good things, and it's kind of a win-win. But yeah, you know, up until recently, I mean, syndication's been around for a while, but most people really have limited options, and a lot of them just think, look, they've been taught that the way to get ahead in life and to save for retirement and all that stuff is to have a 401k and to put your money in the stock market. And you're kind of sold this story that, you know, you just put me on the stock market goes up on average 12%. So as long as you put money in every consistently, then you're going to get to where you want to get. And I think more and more people are finding out that that's not true. And especially in the Wall Street world, that there's so much, I hope, not offending anyone. There's a lot of, I think, a lot of corruption going on in the Wall Street and hidden fees, and people just don't realize how they're been taken advantage of, or even the stock market. If you're playing in the stock market, you know how that's kind of rigged, and you've got these high frequency traders, and you've got, right, you know, again, all this stuff. And so the nice thing about syndication is you kind of take ownership of your own life. You get your money and your investors' money, you give them another option. So instead of saying, look, your only option is to go put money in the stock market, the other option is obviously real estate, but for a lot of people that's overwhelming. Like, how am I going to go buy a $9 million apartment building? I don't have $3 million to put down. I've got my, you know, I got 50 grand. I don't have that money. So the syndicators give them a different avenue instead of forcing them to just put it in their 401k or the stock market or anything like that. They actually give them a platform so they can take advantage of the benefits of real estate, which we're all passionate about because it's just such a great vehicle to create wealth and to create security for your family. So that's why we kind of push it so hard, just trying to educate people that there are other options out there other than your 401k and your stock market.
And do you guys envision, I mean, I know you were once with them full-time. Now you have just a great working relationship. Do you guys envision a day where this becomes more and more like droves of good people like Eric and my family just starting to become quality syndicators?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. I forget the actual numbers, but I mean, I don't know if it's $1 billion. I mean, I think that's one of the goals. Because the way that we think of it is every dollar that gets put into a syndication is a dollar that didn't go to Wall Street. And so if we can teach enough syndicators to go raise, you know, $1 billion, that's $1 billion that we've taken out of I call it Main Street, the firms over to Main Street. So that's kind of the goal. And you know, I know Russ is really passionate and really anti Wall Street. I'm anti Wall Street, probably not at the level of Russ is, but that's the goal and that's the passion, is to get as much money out of Wall Street and back into Main Street.
You know, and Mel, Eric and I talk about how we hope this little show, which helps bridge the gap between motivation to get into the real estate world and having some skills and not having the capital. So we're actually hoping to be a feeder organization to what you guys are all doing. And we definitely respect it. We really love it. We love what you guys are doing. As a matter of fact, it changed Melanie and I our entire life. Eric has come to some of our events. We do these things we call them. Now we call them Learning Grows with Accountable Equity. And people just come. I mean, right, Eric? I mean, what was it? 50 plus people came last time and spent
the whole big group. Yeah, a lot of people eager to learn and invest.
Today is the day where we start to transition to teaching more and more people how to get into the world of syndication. And Mauricio Raul from Premier Law Group, you have been a superstar today, buddy. Can't wait to see you at the next Secrets of Syndication.
Man, me too, buddy. Really appreciate you having me, and it's been a lot of fun.
Before we let you go, Mauricio, what are some of the ways people can reach out to you? Websites, email, social media, anything you want to put out there?
Yeah, website's probably the easiest. You can contact me through premierlawgroup.net. Again, premierlawgroup.net. I'm also putting out a ton of videos on Facebook. So if you want to find me on Facebook, just under Mauricio Raul, you'll see a lot of videos that I'm putting out. And I just started a YouTube channel, which isn't public yet. So if you contact me through either of those two sources, or at some point you can probably, you know, just do a search on YouTube and you'll see those videos popping up, which hopefully will add value to whatever you're doing.
Wonderful, buddy. Great job.
Cool. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody.
Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. Absolutely. By the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility.
Woo! Are you ready to invest in real estate but don't have the time or enough education to do it by yourself? Accountable Equity helps accredited investors who are looking for tax-advantaged investments. So anyone looking for a team of professionals who hold themselves accountable with theirs and your real estate investments, Accountable Equity is your boots-on-the-ground team. Their mission is to bring private offerings to their investors and their clients. With a team of committed and experienced investors themselves, Accountable Equity is always looking for partners to participate in alternative investments which extend beyond publicly traded equities like stocks. Accountable Equity makes alternative passive cash flow possible for more people than ever before in our economy. To find out more, visit AccountableEquity.com. That's AccountableEquity.com. Or look for them on LinkedIn or Facebook. That's AccountableEquity.com or Accountable Equity. That's Accountable Equity, your partner for true passive real estate investments.